If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just to give you a heads up, one of us is bound to say something not suitable for little ears. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, January 20th, the Family History Fiasco Edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry, who's 9, Oliver, who's 7, and Teddy, who's 5. And we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I'm Zach Rosen. I host The Best Advice Show. It's a very short podcast in which I want to hear your advice. And I live in Detroit with my family. My daughter, Noah, is 4, and my son, Ami, is 1.
I'm Jamie Green. I'm a freelance writer and editor, and I'm associate editor for Future Tense, which is a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. My son, Miles, is 2.5 years old, and we live in New Britain, Connecticut.
Jamie, we're so excited to have you with us this week.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Great to meet you.
Well, on today's show, we've got an interesting question from a listener who got some long-awaited news over the holidays. However, her partner isn't excited at all. She's crushed and wondering why he can't just pretend to care. Then lace up your kicks. We're going to get active with the help of a kids' fitness expert, Larissa Maloney. And on Slate Plus, I don't know about you, but for a lot of us, it seems like the perfect time to do another round of screaming into the void. It'll be cathartic. Join us. But let's start off the show with a round of triumphs and fails. Zach, will you kick us off?
I will. I have failure this week, which has been a kind of failure that I've been noticing in myself since parenting started.
It's and been brewing.
It's just been ongoing. I think like I'm trying to evolve. And it's tough for me. I guess to start, I should say, I learned from, this is like a grotesque promo for my show, but I really did learn it from my show. Someone gave some advice about this idea. It's an improv comedy idea, but he uses it in real life. This notion of going from A to C, whereas like A is the thing, and then B is like what your lizard brain, like the first instinctual thing that you would say. And then C is like after you take a beat and like think about something. So an improv, like bananas A, B would be apple, but C would be a guy boxing fruit at the grocery store or something. I don't know. So, but he's just talking about it as like, don't be reactive. Don't just like say B immediately, but just wait a second. And constantly, it happens all the time, especially when we're trying to get out the door in the morning with Noah, my 4-year-old. And it's just like, I can't just like, she's sad about going back to school today. She hasn't been in school in 5 weeks because COVID and Christmas. And I was like just not being patient and it wasn't helping. And it's this thing. It's like, Noah, if you don't get your boots on right now, you're not going to have TV for the rest of the week. And it's just like, why don't you like hang back for 1 second, Zach, and like recognize that she's sad about going back to school, recognize that this isn't going to get her ready any faster. And that, yeah, she's going to frustrate you, but don't just take it out on her like that. And so I've been thinking about that in the context of A to C. B is just this like base reactive, like awful person who I don't like. And C is like, okay, let's figure this out. And so my failure is acting on B and not waiting for C.
I think though, this is like as parents, like the less sleep we're getting and the more other stuff that's going on, it's like all of those adulting skills where we're supposed to be patient, like go out the window with this tiny creature who we love, but makes us crazy. I've seen this used to break the yelling habit, which that was not what I use this for. I use this to break like another bad parenting habit, but I literally would wear a rubber band around my wrist and pop myself with it, just like very lightly when I caught myself doing it. Have you ever tried this or heard of this?
I've heard you talk about it, but it's fascinating. I haven't tried it yet.
I used to do that to try to stop biting my nails.
Okay, same thing. Exactly. Exactly. I also think, Zach, that if you're catching yourself doing it, that means you are evolving, right? Because it's I think it's always okay to show our kids that, like, just because we said it does not mean we need to double down, that we can totally as parents say, like, you know what, the TV thing is totally ridiculous, I'm so sorry, I'm rushing us both, like, what do you need in this moment? And I find I really hate being late, like, in case you guys haven't noticed about me. I really like things, and so I've noticed that anxiety about being late, even in situations where it doesn't matter. Like, if we're late to my kids' preschool, literally no one cares. Everybody else is late all the time. And usually I'm so early that leaving wouldn't even make us late. But, like, I'm taking that anxiety and putting it on them. Like, it's their fault. And so, one, you're in good company. But, two, I think you can, if you're stopping yourself, just, like, apologize and do the next thing. But I did find the popping to be helpful, just, like, it started to associate that tiny little tinge of pain before I even did it.
It's fascinating,
Well, and even aside from the negative reinforcement of the pain, it also makes you notice in the moment. Like, it makes you say, I did it. And sort of like you were saying, if you can do that and see that as the growth and see that as, okay, I did it, but then I noticed and I realized I didn't want to do that. Hopefully that's a first step. I mean, you don't want to get stuck in that noticing and self-berating spiral either.
Yeah. But hopefully, like, the noticing is like a liminal space of moving from A to C. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
acceptance is the first step.
Yeah.
All right, Jamie, do you have a triumph or fail for us?
Yeah, I am taking a triumph because I just so desperately need it. And it's like real, real small potatoes. Like, once you guys asked me to be on the show, I started like keeping my eyes open for like triumph or fail, triumph or fail, triumph or fail. And everything just felt so flat and neutral. I was like, I don't have any of it. And I realize it's because I've been in survival mode since just before the holidays. We had a daycare COVID exposure right before Christmas, so our holiday break was like 2.5 weeks. And then going back to school has felt so precarious. And we had a snow delay, and we had a 4-day weekend this past weekend. And so it's just been pure survival mode. But then, because I was paying attention and really looking for a triumph or fail, I found a triumph that I'm going to take from this past weekend, which is I cleaned the bathrooms, which is one of my chores, the way that my husband and I split up chores. And then even a bigger one, I made banana bread during my kids' nap on Sunday. And the triumph in this isn't the clean bathroom or the baking. I try not to attach a value judgment to that. Like, if the bathroom is going for a while, just quick wipe down, you know, that's what you got to do. But I took these things as a sign that we're coming out of survival mode, that I was able to really just clean the bathrooms for an hour, and that during nap time, I wasn't just collapsed on the couch looking at my phone for 2 hours, but I was like, we have bananas. I want to make banana bread, you know, like feeling that energy and appreciating it, even though it's manifesting it in these very low-level ways, really just made me feel a lot better. Where no matter what happens next, no matter what phone calls come from school in the next, you know, whenever, like, I had a weekend where I felt kind of human, and that, God, low bar, but it's a real triumph.
That's so good.
It's a wonderful triumph.
Totally.
Thank you.
A return to normalcy. Could we only have that everywhere?
Yeah.
Chocolate chips? I'm just curious.
No, but a sprinkling of sugar on top. So the whole top is just like rock solid sugar crust.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Sounds great.
And when I see people on social media, of course, like what a doomed beginning of a sentence. But when I see people cooking and baking and making interesting things, especially people who don't have children, I feel so jealous because I'm like, if I didn't have a kid, I would be using lockdown these last 2 years to do lots of cool, weird baking. But it's just like, So this banana bread that didn't require a mixer, didn't require softening butter. It was just like, I'm really grateful that I found that and could have that little triumph.
Awesome.
Did it taste like a triumph too?
It was a little bit.
Oh no, I'm so sorry that I asked.
No. It has turned into a triumph. And my son likes it, which is always gratifying.
Okay, there we go.
But it had two cups of flour in it, and I replaced one of the cups with whole wheat flour, and it made it pretty dry because I didn't add any extra liquid or anything. But by day two, or by getting to the middle of the loaf, I don't know which it was, it got a lot better. And you just toast it, put a little butter on it, pure triumph.
Yum.
Totally.
Yum. Well, I think that's wonderful. I am taking a big fat fail for just my weekend getaway. And so one of the things we've done a lot during COVID has been like to rent an Airbnb just in the middle of nowhere. Like there's not really anything particularly we want to do in the area, just like something cute, go there, bring some board games and just like be in a different location. So yeah. I found this Airbnb little cabin that's up in the mountains, but is only like 30 minutes, 45 minutes from here. So it seemed really doable. We drive up Friday. So we get on the road and like the car is packed. Everybody's like so happy. We're listening to this audiobook in the car. Just like great start. And there's only one highway, Highway 24, that goes up through the mountains. And of course we get there and it is backed up, closed. There's been some kind of accident or something. When you live near the mountains, which is something I'm discovering here, there's like only one road. Like the other road to get there is 2.5 hours. So then Jeff's like, okay, well, do we like sit in this traffic or do I like reverse down this road and we take the 2.5 hours? And I'm like, okay, well, let's just drive. I'd rather be driving. Let's take the 2.5 hours. So we back off the road and it's like snowing in Colorado Springs, like so beautiful. We have to drive like all the way down to this other canyon city and then in the canyon, get back on the mountain road. And all of a sudden the road becomes like super windy and we're like clouded in. And it would not be a new camp road trip if one of my kids did not get car sick.
Yeah.
So of course, Teddy is like car sick. Now, the good news is we've been car sick so much that they are like, bag. And I'm like, I like throw the bag back and he vomits into the bag. It's fine.
Incredible.
It's like snowing. So nobody wants to get out of the car to like get some fresh air. So I think we've like survived this. And we finally complete the 2.5 hours to get to the cabin that's only 30 minutes from our house. It's like down in this valley, which is fine because gravity, you know, takes you down. So the minivan is like going down, down, down. And then it's kind of like up to get to the cabin and we just cannot get the minivan up, which is not a big deal. We can like park the car, walk to our cabin and Jeff, not me, can ferry all of the things. We get everybody into the cabin and then Jeff like throws some dirt on the road and ends up getting the van there. But of course, overnight, everything freezes. And so we literally cannot get out of this house. Like we, even if we can back down, we can't get up this big hill. We have to like call the owner of the place who's out. He has like a farm to come like plow the road and then let the sun. I mean, the kids had a great time. They had no idea, but we're like, are we going to be stuck here? But the fail is that like since moving here on my list of things to do has been to buy chains for the minivan. Like if you try to drive over Highway 70, which is the main road through the mountains, you have to have chains, but I haven't done it because it's felt like this huge thing. And then I thought, well, even if I buy them, like what are the odds that I even know how to get them on or like that I can do this? So I have just like completely not done this. I didn't ask Jeff to do it. I just didn't do it because it seemed too big. And now here we are, you know, and thankfully Jeff is like not saying like, if you had just bought the chains and put them in our car, we would not
That's
be
great.
In this. Yeah.
That sounds, so that sounds like now, a triumph, that part.
Yeah. I have now purchased this is the triumph. I have now purchased something called snow socks, which are apparently easier than chains. They don't last as long. But hopefully when they arrive, I will learn to put them on my own car so that I can drive my little minivan wherever it needs to go in this snowy terrain. Do you have to have chains in Detroit? And you're in Connecticut. Do you guys have to have chains to go places?
I'm chainless in Detroit.
I hope I'm not supposed to because we don't. I don't think there are a lot
of
hills.
Some people have them, though.
Yeah, I'm sure people do. I don't know. We only moved here like a year and a half ago. So
you're like me. You don't know.
I don't know
till you know.
All these big surprises. You know. We bought a snowblower last winter. That felt like a big deal.
Yeah, for sure.
We're still shoveling. See? So Colorado listeners, I'm sorry to let you all down.
It does sound like quite an adventure, though. Like,
oh, my God.
And as you said, it sounded like the kids had a great time, which is good.
Oh, they just think this is how trips go, right? Because every trip with us is like this.
Puking and ice and...
Yeah. I think when we say we're stuck here, they're like, are they serious? We don't know. Can we run out in the snow and run around and find tracks? Sure, because we can't go anywhere else.
Yeah. So.
That's fun.
Well, with our triumphs and fails behind us, it's time to move on to somebody else's problem.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
So we are going to check out our first listener question, which is being read by the incomparable Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, can I get some honest feedback? I got myself a DNA test for Christmas. My mom is adopted, and she won't get one, so I've always been curious. I got the results last night and mentioned it to my partner earlier this evening. Zero response. Zero. My feelings are hurt, and I'm not sure how to broach it. I don't want him to be curious about something he's not genuinely curious about, but one, this is 50% of his kid's genetic makeup, and two, if it were his genetic report, I'd be devouring it. How can he now be at all interested, or even pretend to be? Thanks. Genetically curious.
The first time that I read this question, I thought that my response was going to be all about, like, there's a lot of missing information here. But I noticed something hearing it this time, which is, I don't want him to be curious about something he's not genuinely curious about, but if it were his genetic report, I'd be devouring it. And there are two totally separate problems in this question. One is the partner not caring that the letter writer cares, but the letter writer wants the husband to care about the results. And that is not a thing you can do. I think it's totally legit to say, hey, I really care about this and I want to tell you why it matters to me. And the partner should say, yes, I am listening, and turn away from the TV and put down the phone and pay attention. But he really might not care. And that, I think, separating those two desires for the partner to care about the letter writer's feelings versus the partner caring about the results is step number one here.
Right, because in one mode, she like opens the envelope and she's like, oh, the genetic makeup, like my genetic test is here. But or is she like begging him to listen?
Right.
And he's just like, I don't care.
Yeah. Like, is there a confrontation here? Or because when I see a sentence like my feelings are hurt and I'm not sure how to broach it, maybe this is simplistic of me, but I think the way to broach it is to say, hey, can we talk for a second? Last night I felt bad because X, Y, and Z. Right. Like the way to broach it is to just tell it. But I think what's really going on here is the letter writer is disappointed that the partner doesn't care about the results the way she cares about the results. And I think that that is a fruitless path because you can't make him care, but you can explain to him why it's important to you. And, you know, I think that that separating those two and just like going down that. But yeah, like the way I picture this, like I for some reason imagine it in my own house. I guess with me and my husband, we're like, I walk into the living room and I'm like sort of, when you walk into the living room, you're also facing the TV the same direction as the person sitting on the couch. And so like saying like, oh, I got this thing. And just like you were saying, was he just like, oh, okay, cool. And then you like crumple inside and you go into the kitchen and cry silently for a second, right? Because you're like, it was important. Like if that's the case, you just need to sort of redo it and say, hey, this is really important to me. Can I tell you why? And can you make eye contact for a second while I talk about it, because that is a totally legitimate thing to ask, I think, to say like, hey, this is something that really matters to me. Like when I do my nails, I show my husband every time and he does not care, but he knows that it matters to me that he looks and responds, but I can't make him care about whether or not I've done my nails.
No, you can't change his feelings about it. But it does seem to me like in this question, are we seeing a complete breakdown of communication?
Or is he being a jerk? And she was like, I got my results. And he was like, I do not care. I think that those are stupid. You just sold someone your data. You know, like, is he saying like, genes don't matter, nurture matters, it's all environmental. Like, is this is this an essential like values disagreement, or is it a communication disagreement?
It comes back to something that a lot of our questions come back to, is this just, it's seemingly foundational need to learn how to tell each other what we need. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at it, you know, a lot of the times. And that might just be the thing. Like, I need you to recognize that I'm excited about this partner. And once we can do that, I feel like it gets so much easier. Because, like, if you don't know how to broach it, like, I want you just to be able to broach without feeling like there's going to be some kind of, like he's going to be pissed if you broach it. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Like, why can't you say that it's important? So Jeff and I went to this military marriage retreat, and one of the tools we learned there that I think is really great but can be very awkward is they call it knees to knees. But basically you literally tell your partner that you need to schedule time to talk about something. So like when would be a good time? Because the first thing is like, just because it's a good time for you doesn't mean it's a good time for them. So saying like, hey, this is really important to me, when is a good time that we can talk about this? And then you literally sit facing each other, and the goal is for you to just feel heard. So you are going to say all the things that are facts without asserting any blame. And I did write out what I thought, based on my own vision of this, it might sound like. So saying something like, I was really excited about getting this genetic test. My expectation was that you would be really excited too, even just for my excitement. When you didn't ask me any questions, or insert like when you didn't turn around, when you didn't, whatever the fact of how he acted, no judgment value, it made me feel really sad. And then he would have a chance to say his piece, which, in my experience with practicing this, it is like Jeff and I, the reality of the situation was totally different. Like if Jeff might say to me, moments before you walked in, I took a phone call about X and my brain was full of work stuff, or my brain was full trying to figure out how we were going to manage this. And so, yes, I heard you say you got this, but I did not connect the importance of this with what you said, right? So being able to say that. Now, listen, the knees to knees does not resolve anything. It is not going to make you feel like now he's excited. But what it does for me, which I think is like a key to communication, is I feel like he's now heard that this was important to me. And in the moment that I chose to present it, I did not get the feedback I was looking for, right? And I will tell you that like 9 times out of 10, he's just like, I'm so sorry, because my intent was not to make you sad about this. I didn't even think that it mattered, which, I mean, and maybe you've had this long conversation and so he should know it matters. But also, like, how many times have you been doing something else and your partner presents you with things and you're just sort of like, okay, great. And then later in the day, you're like, wait a minute. So I think this definitely, you either need to do that or just like revisit. I don't know. We've had things like that where I literally say like, I think the only thing that would make me feel better is if we like pretended I got the letter again. and literally just start it like a total redo. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to kind of performatively open the letter and he's going to be performatively excited about it as a jumping off point for going forward. But I think it's important that we give each other those redos the same way that we give kids those redos. Like you should be giving your partner that, unless this is hinting at like a larger issue of like you never feel appreciated or heard.
I noticed something you said in your mock-up of how you would do the talking about it, where you said you did like the classic I feel statement, you know, when you reacted the way you reacted. But I noticed, I loved what you said. You said when you reacted however you did, I felt sad. And it's even less blame-making than my feelings were hurt. Because my feelings were hurt is someone, you hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. My feelings were hurt. I'm just like leaving out the subject and the passive construction. But just this happened and I felt sad is like the least accusatory way to do it. And I love that. I'm going to steal that and use that because I think like saying, oh, that hurt my feelings is not quite as neutral as we can be, you know,
or
as
start, just like I felt angry or I felt jealous or I felt abandoned. Because I think then too, your partner knows how to deal with the feelings that you're sitting with. Because a lot of times, especially for adults, like anger, sadness, frustration, all look, you know, they all look like me in the pantry eating chocolate, quietly crying, right? Like
it can be like sincere, you know, performance too, you know? And I was thinking about that in the form of when you do start to resolve this, when you do start to play this out, like being able to just quickly forgive our partners when we actually, like when there isn't a need to be resentful and there isn't something lingering, just like, I'm sorry that I wasn't paying attention. And then for you to accept, okay, you know, again, giving the benefit of the doubt, you know, the quick apology, the redo, these are all like great things that I try to practice and often fail at.
I think it's really worth separating forgiving them and the hurt. Like you can forgive them and still feel that kind of sting and still ask for what you need to make that pain go away.
Yes.
But you can like, you can forgive quickly and then still, you can still need more to feel healed and resolved.
That's a great point.
I'd never really thought about that before. So I'm really grateful to Zach for putting it that way, because I'm usually thinking like until this pain and sadness goes away, the problem is not fixed. Like we're not okay, but the partners can be on the same team and then together say like, okay, like what do we need to do so that we are both feeling okay emotionally now? You know, like forgiveness first and then healing and resolution, and just seeing that they're separate. Never occurred to me before.
I love that.
Separate and also just like not one time. You know, it's like forgiveness, healing, a little more forgiveness, a little more healing.
Yeah, it's ongoing. Yeah.
I wonder too if this is like a recurring thing, if you can use this moment also as kind of, teaching moment is the wrong word, but like as a case study, so that in your discussion about it to say, you know, I get these feelings a lot when this miscommunication happens, because that's what it is. It's a miscommunication. How can I, like, what words can I use, or how can I make sure we're in the right space to have these conversations in the future, right? Because he's the best person to ask this to. Your partner knows what he needs. Maybe he says, like, I really can't handle more information until this time, or like, I need the kids to be in bed, whatever it is.
Or like, he might have focus troubles, and he might say, as if he hears you, but it might just be kind of
it's
going
just, like,
straight through. So you might have to say, like, hey, I have something important. Are you ready to listen?
Yeah. And I think when you make that too, be prepared that he may say like, I'm not ready to listen right now. And that it's okay, like you were saying, to ask for what you need then. Like, okay, I need us to schedule a time in the next 24 hours to talk about this because that's what I need. And you're also though respecting what your partner needs. So,
yeah.
Today's episode isn't brought to you by 23andMe, but really could be.
It should be ad people. Get on that. Do you want someone to be excited about your results? It's a new service they could offer.
Oh, no.
Well, genetically curious, we hope this advice helps you have a conversation with your partner and avoid future disappointment. Everyone else, if you have a parenting question, drop us a line. You can email us at momanddad@slate.com or post to the Slate Parenting Facebook group like this listener did. Well, listeners, winter is officially here, and I don't know about you, but I find these cold months the hardest to keep the kids, and honestly, myself, active inside. So here to help us keep the whole family moving is Larissa Maloney. Larissa is a mom of three, a former professional volleyball player, and the founder and CEO of Active Kids 2.0, an online fitness and wellness platform for kids ages 3 and up. Larissa and I met on Instagram during the early days of the pandemic, and I'm so excited to share her enthusiasm for family fitness with you. Welcome to the show, Larissa.
Yay! Thanks for having me, Elizabeth. I am so happy to be here with you.
Well, I feel like it could not be better timing because I want to be active. And in the summer, it's so easy for me. Like, I love being outside and getting, like, going for walks, all of that, so easy.
Yeah.
But it just feels like once I feel like we have to be inside, it's hard. And I know they recommend, like, at least 1 hour of fitness a day for kids. But can you just quickly sum up, like, why that's so important?
Yeah, absolutely. So 60 minutes a day is, you know, that's the recommended amount. But when you say 60 minutes of fitness, everyone gets scared. They're like, oh, yeah, my goodness, I have to do a 60 minute workout. Like, no way. Yeah. Like, I don't even do a 60 minute workout a day. Like, no, it's 60 minutes of movement a day. So literally, if you're walking to the mailbox, that counts. You know, if you are going up the stairs in your house, that counts. You know what I mean? So it's 60 minutes total. Of course, your kiddos are probably getting, you know, 20 to 30 minutes in PE as well at school. And, you know, you can mix in a whole bunch of movement throughout your day. So it doesn't have to be that 60 minutes of hardcore workout. So don't worry, Elizabeth, you're on the right track. Don't worry.
I don't have to like buckle us up for a workout. Okay. So I love this. The first takeaway is sort of like, we're breaking that up. It's not 60 minutes. We should totally be getting 5 minutes here, 20 minutes here. So I don't need to like gear the kids up for 60 minute boot camp.
Yeah. There's no boot camp. No, don't worry.
Is there such a thing as like the right kind of exercise for kids, or we're really just focusing on that, getting that energy out, moving the body? Or do I need to be focusing like strength, cardio, like all those things we hear as adults?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So with kids, it's just literally movement. So the younger kids, you kind of want to focus on those basic moves of running, jumping, skipping, hopping. So they, trying to get those basic moves of coordination, and then you kind of move up from there, and then you get into the sports and things like that. But really, movement is what we're looking for in the beginning. So getting the kids used to getting off the couch and doing something.
Okay. So I can't really get outside because weather, COVID, whatever the reason is, I can't go outside. And I just have my normal house playthings, maybe one room I can kind of work in.
Yeah.
What kind of things can I be doing with the kids that they're moving and maybe I'm getting some movement time too? Because it's important that us parents that are home are also getting this movement. So what are some examples of things we can like easily be doing together?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my house, we like to make movement fun. And for us, like, of course, like I just said, like the word working out, the word, you know, cardio and things like that aren't really used in our house because they're kind of like bad words. I don't know. Society has like made those words into bad words. So everything is one, a competition, and everything is fun. So things around the house that we do, I'll just give you an example. We have pretty much everybody as families has like a Jenga set, right?
Yeah.
So we use that sometimes and we'll write different things on the Jenga block. So sometimes we'll do yoga and sometimes we'll do like fun cardio moves, or sometimes we'll get really wacky and make it like monster moves and things like that because I have a 5 and 7 year old and everything's like monsters and superheroes, right? So we'll write something on the Jenga board or on the Jenga block. And then if they pull it out, they have to do that move.
Okay.
And then the person that topples it has to do a 30-second plank. And then usually we all do it. But we kind of set the rules.
If we're all doing it together.
Yeah, we kind of set the rules in the beginning. And our Jenga blocks have a million things written on them now because we usually change it up. But that's something fun to do in the house. And we get creative and we make it a competition, of course.
A little family competition is always good, right?
Yeah.
Motivates everyone to do better. And then it's like you get a 2-for-1 because you're getting this good family bonding time, but you're also like getting some activity.
Yeah. And like literally we're usually laughing for 30 minutes straight. So there you go. The abs are there because we're laughing the whole 30 minutes.
And I'm sure if you're not sure what to write, like you could easily go to Pinterest and look up like, you know, jumping jacks or star jumps or whatever, right?
Oh, star bear jumps.
Like all of those count.
Yeah, that's a family favorite, star jumps, because we always say, you have to say I'm a star when you do the jump.
I love, that's why you're giggling. You're making them like fun too. Like the more ridiculous, the better, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so I know that you have three kids and one is a small, you have a new baby, well, new-ish baby, yeah.
I do, 6 months.
How do you get your workout time in, like with them running underfoot?
I really give them a choice. So I don't say, okay, I'm doing a workout, everybody in the gym, let's do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Literally yesterday I said, does anybody want to do a workout with me? And immediately my little girl, Oakley, she's like my mini me. She's like, me, I want to do it with you. And I said, okay. And then we did, it was a little cardio-ish, but it was fun moves that she liked to do. But my other little one, he's 7, he's a little bit older. And he said, I want to make up my own workout. So while we were doing our little cardio stuff, he was behind me on the boxing bag. So he likes to get his little gloves out and then literally he'll start punching the bag. So we were all in the gym, but but my other one was doing different things. And then my little girl, she liked to do what I was doing. So it's always something like that where I give them a choice. You can do what I'm doing. You can go run outside and do an obstacle course. They love making up their own obstacle course. But I always give them a choice, but we always definitely get that movement in somehow.
What do you do if you have a kid that's like reluctant to do activities?
We have all different kinds of kids. If the kids aren't having fun, then they're not going to want to do it. So just to give you an example, when my kids were a little bit smaller, probably about 3 or 4, we used to go on this trail and we used to call it the dinosaur trail because I used to have a backpack and I used to stuff a whole bunch of dinosaurs in there. Yeah. And we used to turn into explorers. And I used to throw dinosaurs in the bushes and I used to, shake the bush and say, oh, I found a dinosaur, and they used to explore and search for the dinosaur. It is exercise, but it's not exercise to them. They're literally explorers, exploring this trail and they're trying to find dinosaurs. So really making it fun for the kiddo and not making it seem like work.
Yeah, I'm noticing that a lot of your tips too, and even like how you talk about it, it makes it not seem like a thing in some sense, which I think is good, right? Because we read a lot about how important it is what we're putting into our kids' heads about keeping ourselves healthy.
Yeah.
Do you have any more tips on like what the dialogue in your house around healthy bodies looks like?
Absolutely. Oh, healthy bodies. I mean, we could talk about that for hours. You know what I mean? But you're right. The dialogue is so, so important. And it starts with us. And we know that, especially as moms, it starts with us, how we're talking to ourselves. And because I have a little one that listens to everything.
Yeah.
You think that they don't hear, but they're listening. They're listening. You know what I mean? So it's so important that we know that it starts with ourselves. We like to talk about nutrition in that way too, because obviously, exercise and nutrition go hand in hand. So when we're talking about foods, it's important that we're not saying, bad foods and good foods. We talk about veggies and fruits. We talk about what they mean and what they can do for your body. So when we talk about eating carrots, we say carrots make you see in the dark.
Yeah.
So obviously, carrots do help your eyesight and things like that. So we're, putting two and two together for the kiddos. So they know that these foods, are healthy and they do things for you, but where the dialogue is so much different. So we're really relating it to like superhero things. Spinach makes you stronger.
Yeah, like that you're fueling your body. And I would assume we can do the same with exercise to talk about like the walking and the throwing, like all of that is important so that our bodies can do all these amazing things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The same thing with exercise. And I think we're in the stage of superheroes and things like that for my kids. So we're always relating it to like Superman and Spider-Man does this. And, you're doing lunges to strengthen your legs so you can climb up the, so you're Spider-Man, you're climbing up those buildings and things like that. And, It doesn't have to be anything strenuous. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be anything. Making exercise fun again. And once I feel like as adults, once we make it fun, you know, for our kiddos, we realize that exercise can be fun for us as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Before I let you go, I want to make sure that really quick you talk about Active Kids 2.0. And so if parents are looking for something at home that is more like someone else giving instruction, or maybe you are still homeschooling or have your kids at home and are looking for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like you said, it's an at-home PE class, really. It literally gives you 30 minutes to maybe do the dishes, maybe to take a shower, you know, to fold clothes. So it's really fun. Our coaches are super engaging and the kids absolutely love it.
Awesome. Well, Larissa, thank you so much for joining us today. I think you have given our listeners lots of resources and hopefully some motivation to just try some new things and add some activity into things they're already doing. And I promise, like, it really does make the winter go faster.
Yes. Well, thanks, Elizabeth, for having me. I so appreciate it.
So I just got off the interview with Larissa, and she suggested that we take our Jenga blocks and write different activities on them. So I downloaded a list from Pinterest, and we took each Jenga block and wrote something on it. And now we are going to give Fitness Jenga a try. Okay, go ahead, push one out. All right.
Please don't get all of them.
Okay, I got, do a cartwheel.
Cartwheel. Okay, not gonna go.
Ta-da!
Is it my turn?
Yeah. Oh, 10 second plank. What? You want me to do with it? Do you remember plank?
No.
Like this.
Oh, I can like that.
Come on. Ready, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Why am I the only one counting? 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, Oliver, pick one out. Oh, Henry's still planking. Extra credit. What does it say?
Somersault.
Somersault. Let's see you do a somersault.
I wish I could have that somersault.
You can do one too. Everyone can do one. Oh, we got a good cartwheel. Who can do a somersault? Oh, we got Teddy's cart.
A somersault.
Somersaults. Oh, watch out. Ooh.
That's a plank.
Okay.
Monster.
The tower, the Jenga tower is leaning and... game of fitness Jenga. Well, it's finally time for recommendations. This is when we tell you about something we're currently enjoying. Jamie, as our guest this week, will you kick us off?
Sure. When I was thinking about my recommendation, I know that often it's like, here's like one little thing I did this week or an ingredient I bought at Trader Joe's. But since I'm a guest, I'm going to come out with like a big one for me, something that has been very, my one chance to recommend, something that's been very important to me through parenthood. And it's kind of in line with the episode because it's about, you know, fitness and taking care of your body and keeping moving. So I'm recommending something called Mama Strong, which is essentially an online workout program for pregnant and postpartum people, all the way, you know, infinitely postpartum. And it's built around 15-minute daily workouts or week daily, as I tend to do them, with a real focus on like functionality, or as I like to think about it, making sure that my muscles don't turn into stone, you know, that awful feeling where you just have not moved. And I started doing Mama Strong probably in my second trimester, so I guess about 3 years ago, and it has just been a lifeline for me for handling like the weird pains and discomforts that come with pregnancy to after giving birth and like reconnecting with my body, and then through the pandemic and just having this daily 15 minutes of space just for me to move my body. Sometimes like I'm not leaving my house. I'm not going for walks anymore. It's very cold out. I love it so much. It's become really precious to me. And it's more than just these 15-minute workouts. The most magical one to me is this program they have called Hazy Days, which is for immediately postpartum, where you're not like exercising, but just like remembering how to breathe and like touching your belly area and remembering that this is part of your body. And just, it was a really like precious thing for me right after a pretty unpleasant C-section experience. And it's like completely not appearance focused or weight focused or anything. It's totally about like function and mental health. How do I make my body not hurt after I've been carrying a child all day? It's just like the most positive, supportive. Most of the workouts are led by a woman named Courtney who like will have, she's recording them in her house. A child will run through, a dog will run through. It just is so realistic and it has become very precious to me. And so I'm hopeful that I'm sharing it with some people who will find it to be precious too.
This is
great.
I think this is such a great recommendation to know that you have something that like it's just at your home, and especially in these times, I think is so great just to know that's there. You know, like I'm gonna get these 15 minutes for me to make myself feel, my body feel good. I think that's great.
There are even a couple of the 5-minute hacks for if you're baby wearing or there's a kid sleeping on you, that you just need to like do something and feel like you've been able to give yourself that. And like I said, it just keeps my body from completely ossifying.
I love it. Thanks. Zach, how about you?
This is building on a past recommendation. Maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago, we bought Noah, who was under 4 at the time, some plastic knives because he was really interested in starting to cook with me. And they're just not literally cutting it anymore, pals. I mean, I think they were great in teaching like soft fruit. She can cut a berry, she can cut a cucumber, but anything beyond that, and she wants to like start really prepping dinner with me, which is a dream. It wasn't working. And then so I've been letting her use a real knife, but I'm scared out of my mind. Like I'm totally watching over her and I don't think she's ready. She has made some successful cuts. And so I just ordered Le Petit Chef from Opinel, which is a little set with a finger guard.
Ooh.
And then
I think we must have this. Our kids' knives came with a, it like goes over your knuckles, and you, so you cut right against it.
Yep, exactly.
Well, and that's then teaching proper knife form too.
We talk about the claw a lot in our kitchen. But also the thing about the knife itself, it has this educational ring on it to help position your fingers properly.
We
so
have this.
I'm so excited.
We have this, and I didn't even know that this is. But yes, it's so nice the way they hold it because they cannot get their finger. You know, it's the right way.
Yeah, that's awesome that you have it and that it's working. And I'm hoping that this is going to take, you know, her sous chefing to the next level. What about you?
So, you know, I really like to implement things that we do either daily or weekly that works really well with like my schedule to keep that activity going. And so one of the things I wanted to do in the new year was I always like to like have music playing, but be more intentional kind of with our music appreciation and music listening. And I've been kind of looking, I had downloaded some like listening calendars and stuff that weren't really working. But for Christmas, I received this book called A Year of Wonder, Classical Music for Every Day. And it's written by a violinist. And each day it gives you a piece to play and then like a mini history lesson kind of about like what was going on and also what this violinist hears or is reminded of. And so we've been doing music mornings and it's really nice because it's each day. So it says like January, you know, 20th, and you open it up and then I just ask Alexa to play, you know, whatever that is, or look it up on you know, have her put the YouTube on the TV and we listen and I read the little piece, but it's nice because it's easy. Like even the kids, the two that can read can like open it and ask Alexa to start and read this little blurb. And we're learning a lot. I mean, the only thing I wish I had was that, there was another one of these books for something other than classical music. I love classical music, but I want to try to expose the kids to more than just that. But this seemed like a great way. I've noticed that when I get something in place as like music mornings and it really gets ingrained, it's a lot easier then for me to go find a listening calendar and be like, okay, well, we're already ingrained in doing this, so it's easier for me to look up information. But it's been really great. It's called A Year of Wonder, classical music for every day. You wouldn't have to do it every day, but I love, like, right now we're kind of in wintery type things and a lot of like illustrations of blustery snow, and so while the kids eat, we listen, sometimes they draw. It's really lovely.
It sounds really good.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for our show. But before you go, please subscribe to the show and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, which now has reviews. Yay! If you have a question for us, email us at momanddad@slate.com or post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Zach Rosen and Jamie Green, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. Thanks for listening.